Summit, presented by Earth is Waking Up. This is your host, Jeremy Anderson. Today we have a very special guest on the line, Dr. Thomas O'Brien. Today we're talking about gluten and how that affects our health. Is it good for us? Is it not good for us? Is it some mystery in our health and wellness? What is it? So Dr. Thomas O'Brien is a world-renowned expert in the field of gluten-related disorders, non-celiac gluten sensitivity, celiac disease, and they're linked to other chronic conditions, including autoimmune disorders and diseases. He's the founder of TheDoctor.com, which was created to educate the public about underdiagnosed and undertreated gluten-related disorders, which affect up to about 30% of the population. I think it might be more, but he views the lack of recognition, diagnosis, and treatment of these disorders as a massive public health crisis. Dr. O'Brien serves on the faculty of the Institute of Functional Medicine. His Certified Gluten Practitioner course revolutionizes the way healthcare professionals and coaches diagnose and treat patients suffering from gluten-related disorders. Dr. O'Brien founded and hosted the world's first gluten summit, theglutensummit.com, where he interviewed 29 experts and opinion leaders on the topic of gluten-related health issues. He holds faculty positions with the Institute for Functional Medicine and the National University of Health Sciences. Dr. O'Brien is one of the most respected, highly appreciated speakers. His passion is in teaching manifestations of gluten sensitivity and celiac disease as they occur inside and outside of the intestines. Thanks for being on the show, Dr. O'Brien.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really exciting to be on an Inspired Change Summit. I just love the title of what you're doing, and so look forward to this. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, I have found through my personal experiences that learning about gluten definitely inspired some change in my life. I had some personal issues with. Well, so I had some skin sensitivities, especially. That's what I was noticing most. Originally, I noticed it with dairy back in 2004 when I stopped drinking milk and ended up having milk for a couple weeks while I was in the guard out in the field, and thought, well, I was tired of drinking hot water, so I drank milk. And by the end of that 2 weeks...
It tasted really good, didn't it?
It
does. It tastes really good. You know, when you avoid a food for a while, then you have it for one reason or another, it tastes so good.
Yeah, it kind of did, but milk just did not taste like it did when I was a kid. So something kept telling me, I need to look into this a little more. And that was an amazing test, because by the end of that 2 weeks, I had itchy blisters on the bottom of my feet so bad, I was scratching the skin right off of my feet.
Yes.
So that was a hello, waking up moment about milk. And I eventually, in 2010, had a similar experience with gluten. I was noticing I was still getting these blisters on especially my feet, but it was starting to show up on my hands as well. And once I cut gluten out, those started to disappear. It's like, wow.
That's really interesting. You know, that's also that's also a biomarker for toxicity, is when the bottoms of the feet or the palms of the hand, that the skin starts to peel, you know, and sometimes all you see are the are like these little almost circles of peels of skin that come off, or it can be itching, it can be anything like that, but that's suggestive, not diagnostic, but suggestive of there's something really toxic going on in this body right now. And eating a food that one cannot really digest well is a toxic exposure. So that's consistent with the principles of functional medicine, that your body was talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... That was before I was very clear on what was what and what I needed to be careful of, and it was just another one of those ingredients that I thought I would try taking out of my diet, and was surprised to find that it was in more than just bread and wheat. It can show up in a lot of ways, a lot of different ingredients. Let me ask just high level before we get into more of the details. How did you come across gluten, and how has it changed your life in a big enough way to get you making this your work, your life's work?
It started, yeah, sure, you bet. It started 36 years ago when my ex and I were trying to get pregnant, and we were unable to get pregnant. And at the time, I was an intern in my education, my medical education. And so I called the seven most famous holistic doctors I had ever heard of. There was a couple of chiropractors, a medical doctor, an osteopath, and I spoke to all of them, and I asked them, what do you do to help a couple that can't get pregnant? And they told me everything they do. I put a program together, and we were pregnant in 6 weeks. And whoa. My neighbors in married housing, we lived on campus. They asked if I could work with them. They had been through artificial insemination, and nothing had worked. And I said, well, you know, I don't think anything's going to hurt you. Sure, you know, and let's give it a shot. I'm not sure it'll help, but it certainly won't hurt you. And she was pregnant in 3 months. So before I went into my internship, I was hot to trot, ready to help every couple get pregnant that wanted to get pregnant. And the result was that our friends tasted our excitement about having a pregnancy and watching, you know, my wife grow and all that. And they tell their sister in Wisconsin who was having fertility problems. And she'd come down from Wisconsin to Chicago because I was in Chicago at the time and I'd work with them. And so I was working with people before I was out in practice. And it was really quite an experience. And there's not much in healthcare that's all or every, but this is an every. And every person that had hormone irregularities, whether it was recurrent miscarriages, and we've helped a lot of people with that, or infertility, or just hormone irregularities, every one of them had food sensitivities to a food that they were eating regularly, and they did not know that it was a problem for them because it wasn't making them sick when they ate it. But what we learned, and one of the premises that I teach now, is that a adverse reaction to a food can manifest in, if you pull at a chain, the chain always breaks at the weakest link. It's at one end, the middle, the other end, it's your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys, your reproductive system. Wherever your genetic weak link is, it's your genes and how you've lived your life up to this point that determines where the weak link is. Wherever your genetic weak link is, that's where you're going to go down eventually and have a problem, is wherever that's at. So for one person, if they have mercury toxicity, for example, it manifests as brain dysfunction. For the next person with mercury toxicity, it manifests as kidney dysfunction. That it just depends on which link of the chain is being pulled, it feels the pull more as to where it manifests. And we found that every single person that had hormone imbalances or symptoms of hormone imbalances, such as infertility or recurrent miscarriages, they all had food sensitivities. And the most common food was wheat. So that got me to where every patient that came in, I started checking for sensitivity to wheat, and we'd find it many, many, many times. And then I started reading the literature on it, and just startled me with what I found, and I've been reading the literature now ever since, and I have thousands of articles literally in my library that I've read over the last 30 years. There's 21,000 articles in the National Library of Medicine about the impact of gluten or wheat on your body. 21,000 articles. When I start my presentations, the last few months, I lecture a lot to different doctor groups, and the last few months I've been starting with a case study of a 3.5-year-old little girl that was diagnosed with celiac disease. And celiac disease is when you have a wheat sensitivity that's causing your gut to get inflamed and wear down, and you don't absorb your vitamins and minerals and get really sick. So a 3.5-year-old was diagnosed with that. And when the doctor did the test to diagnose it, he saw there was something in her eye and said, you need to take your daughter to an ophthalmologist right away. I'm going to get you in right away. And so they went to the ophthalmologist and they found a tumor on her eyeball just above the black part, the pupil. So that area is called the conjunctiva. and it was a conjunctival tumor. And the pictures in the medical journal article, they had the little girl look down towards the floor, and they lifted her eyelid up, and so you see the upper part of her eyeball, and there's this big, yeah, ugly tumor there. You know, it's just a nasty-looking thing in the picture. And they thought it's called Kaposi sarcoma, which is from HIV infection because mom was positive for HIV. But the little girl was not positive for HIV. So they said, that's strange. So what is this thing? They didn't know. They didn't know what this thing was. And they wanted to do a biopsy of the eye. But the parents, and so they have to put the child under a general anesthetic to do that. But the parents said, you know, our child just had a reaction to the general anesthetic 2 weeks ago, and she's still recovering, still not quite right, you know, and she's really scared of that. So we'll wait a couple of weeks, and then we'll come back for that. So they come back 2 weeks later, and the only thing the parents had done to that point was they put their child on a gluten-free diet as soon as the child was diagnosed with celiac disease. So they come back 2 weeks later, and the ophthalmologist says, wait a minute, and takes a look. And then takes a pic, he pulls out the file of the first picture, and he said, this tumor is smaller. It's not as pronounced. And so let's just watch this. And so the next picture you see was that one 2 weeks after the first one, and it definitely is smaller. And the next picture is 2 months later, and the tumor is gone. And the only thing different in that child's diet was the child went on a gluten-free diet, and the tumor got reabsorbed. And it was gone.
Wow.
And the ophthalmologist said, we can't explain how this happened. We've never heard of this before. But this certainly suggests that with any inexplainable tumors, you know, it wasn't Kaposi sarcoma from HIV, one might consider just checking for a sensitivity to wheat, because apparently wheat can be a trigger. And as I said earlier, there's 21,000 studies now published, and I've got lots of case studies like that. From reversing ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, to reversing MS, to reversing psoriasis, to reversing Alzheimer's. I mean, it sounds unbelievable, but when you read the medical articles on this, you say, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And the bottom line premise... I'm sorry?
So instead of just prescribing medications, people actually read these articles?
when doctors read in their ophthalmology journal an article like this, you know, many of them will just keep it in the back of their heads. You know, doctors aren't out to hurt people. They just have a limited view of how to look at the body. For example, in one article published in the journal Gastroenterology, they show that 50% of children with drug-resistant epilepsy. Now, that's really bad. That means your child's getting seizures and the drugs you've tried don't work. And it has to be a minimum of two and usually three different drugs that don't work to qualify for drug-resistant epilepsy. 50% of these kids go into complete remission on a gluten-free diet. How is it that our neurologists don't know this? Because it was published in a gastroenterology journal. And neurologists don't read gastroenterology journals. They stay in their discipline of neurology. So, you know, and the whole premise of functional medicine is that we teach doctors to step outside the box of their training, not to let go of anything because they're experts at what they know, but to step outside the box so they can see, as my mentor would say, look with eyes that see, right? So you get a bigger picture when you can step back and just consider what might be a trigger here. And what we've learned is that a sensitivity to wheat may be a trigger for anything, including Alzheimer's. And there are studies on reversing Alzheimer's on a gluten-free diet.
Wow. Now, so I didn't have any problems with it that I knew of until around late 90s, early 2000s. Any ideas why that might have been? Is that normal for a lot of other people too?
Well, you know, they've done a number of studies where someone in the family gets diagnosed with celiac disease, so they check the other kids in the family or the other adults in the family. Nope, they don't have a problem. But then 6-7 years later, that person now has celiac disease. And they look to see, what happened here? How come they didn't have it then, but they have it now?
what's different. Mm-hmm. And what we've learned is that it's not the GMO foods. It's not the GMO that in wheat, because wheat in this country has not been GMO. It's just starting to become GMO now. It's not the hybridization of the wheat. It does have more gluten in it, and it's more difficult to digest. That's absolutely true. And those things are factors, but that's not the reason. The reason, you have to step back to get the picture, and the reason is called a loss of oral tolerance. Wheat is a mild to modest irritant in the body. Mild to modest. So everything that comes down from the fork into your mouth or from the bottle into your mouth, everything gets screened by the immune system in the gut. Many people have heard this, but some may not, that 70% of your entire immune system, somewhere between 65 to 80%, depending on what study you read, of your entire immune system is in your gut. It's not in your bloodstream. It's in your gut, because that's where we get the most insults that may cause a problem for us. So everything you eat, every forkful gets screened. Is this good for me? Is this not good for me? Am I going to be tolerant to this, or am I not tolerant? Which determines if your immune system gets activated to fight this thing. So when you're 6 months to a year old, you're being introduced to different foods that your parents are giving you, your mom's giving you. You take the food, you start chewing the food, it's going down, and your immune system in the gut says, wait a minute, what is this? Oh, this is carrot. This is okay. Let it go. Wait, what is this? Oh, this is banana. This is okay. Let it through. Wait, what is? Oh, this is Klebsiella. This is a bad bacteria. I need to fight this. And your immune system determines friend and foe. Mm-hmm. So what has happened now for the first time in the history of the human species is that we are being poisoned like our ancestors have never been poisoned before. And we have no defenses against bisphenol A, the chemical that softens plastic water bottles, or it's in your soft contact lenses. We have no defenses against mercury in the fish. We have no defenses against endocrine disrupting chemicals, against PCPs and DDT, and we have no defenses against this. So these chemicals come down with the food into our intestines, and your immune system gets activated to fight these things. Mm-hmm. When your immune system gets activated to fight these things in the gut, it causes inflammation. That is our only defense to fight an intruder, is to produce these things called cytokines. They're like chemical bullets that cause inflammation and break down the cell walls of whatever it is we're fighting. So your immune system gets activated. We now know the Environmental Working Group published a study 2 years ago that showed that 10 out of 10 babies have over 200 chemicals at birth in their bloodstream. There's remnants of over 200 chemicals at birth. And that are not supposed to be in the body. They're not supposed to be there. So what happens is that your immune system from day one is fighting all of this stuff that's coming in the GMO foods, in the non-organic foods, in the lot-raised cattle, in the cage-raised chickens, in the farm-raised fish, all of this garbage chemicals that are in the body of the food we eat trigger immune responses in the gut. So your immune system, because there's an onslaught every day, stay with me on this, there's an onslaught every day of all these toxic chemicals, your immune system becomes hypervigilant. It's firing chemical bullets all the time. Boom, 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 boom. It doesn't stop. It's just trying to protect you. And the result is, the mild to moderate irritants that it used to let slide by, like wheat, it doesn't slide by anymore. Now you make antibodies to wheat. And now the systemic problem begins with a sensitivity to wheat. And then depending on the weak link in your chain, in a couple of years, it could be a couple of months, you could be 2 years old, you could be 22 years old, you could be 62 years old, but somewhere you cross the line and you lose oral tolerance because of the straw that broke the camel's back, now your immune system is fighting wheat. And when you fight wheat, those antibodies can attack any other tissue in your body, depending on your genetic vulnerability.
Wow. So you said, I think somewhere, that it takes several months to work the body back to a point where it can actually stabilize and not have this autoimmune problem anymore. Is that right?
Oh, it takes months to years. For example, I was just talking to a patient today that has, it's called dystonia. That's when your muscles don't work very well at all. Your facial muscles slack off. It's almost like Bell's palsy, or you get cramps in your legs that don't go away. It's a problem with muscle. And she's had it for 5 years. And the doctors put her on steroids, and they don't help at all for this, but the doctors just don't know what to do because they're muscle doctors. And this is not a muscle problem. This is an immune problem, but the doctors don't know that. And so as I was talking to her about this, what I said to her was, she said, how long will this take? Am I going to feel better in a couple of weeks? And I said, well, you might feel better in a few weeks. You should feel better certainly within a month, knowing you're on the right track, but this will take a year, 2 years. You've got 5 years of damage that's been accumulating there. I don't have a magic wand, that's going to be able to just say, be well now. And that doesn't happen. But you get a little bit stronger, a little bit stronger, a little bit stronger. And if you slack off, or if you think you can have a little once in a while and it doesn't matter, you're going to set yourself back dramatically. For every single exposure, once you've crossed the line and lost oral tolerance and you have antibodies to wheat, any of the fragments of wheat, once you cross that line, it's permanent. And so 2 years later, you've been gluten-free, you feel like $1 million, you're doing great. If that was your problem, the only problem, and you go gluten-free, now you feel great. 2 years later, you have a piece of your granddaughter's birthday cake because you want to be nice, and it tastes okay. And the next day, you're a little tired, no big deal, but then you're fine because you've been really healthy for the last few years. But you now are going to have antibodies to gluten pulling on the chain wherever your weak link is for 3 to 6 months. From one exposure, and you don't feel when your chain's being pulled. You don't feel it until the link gets so weak and stretched out, now you start getting symptoms. But for 3 to 6 months from a single exposure, you may have complications. So that's why the guidance we give is that you cannot be a little pregnant. You cannot have a little gluten. Once you've crossed the line, and you make antibodies to gluten, you cannot have a little once in a while. It's all science. Wow. It's all just basic science. If you read the science, it becomes very clear.
Wow. Yeah, about 3 months ago.
This is an OMG interview for most people. It really is because doctors just don't have the opportunity to read all of these studies. They read their neurology journals, or if they're gastroenterologists, they read their gastroenterology journals, and they know a little bit. They know a little bit about this, but they don't have the big picture.
So what would it take for them to cross-pollinate a little more, or somehow somebody help bring some of those tidbits of knowledge across disciplines?
Patient demand. It takes patient demand. Until the doctors really feel, because doctors all go to school. They want to help heal the planet. The vast majority of them are really good people, and they came in with the best of intent and deep passion to help heal the planet and help people. They got beat down by the system. We've all heard the horror stories of 36-hour shifts when you're a resident. What kind of nonsense is that? Putting someone's life in your hand and making some young kid stay up for 36 hours and then make critical decisions. Nonsense. You do that for our special forces guys, that's fine. They're fighting to save lives physically. But you don't do that with doctors when they need their brains working really well, right? But that's the system that we've got. That's the system that we've got. And so people get beat down and they get locked into thinking a particular way. And they have to break out of that mold. And how do you do that? Patient demand. And as you are having this this summit on inspired change, there are more summits like that. I'll be doing one in a little bit on autoimmunity, and I've been traveling the world interviewing the world leaders on this topic of autoimmunity. And the more this information can get out there to people, you know, the sooner we can make the changes. Because what the science tells us, and this is published science in the British Medical Journal, the average, not the exception, the average for translational research, that means it translates the way we think about things. You know, it shifts our whole context. The average from when it's first published before the doc down the street is using that information is 17 years. 17 wow. years from when really critical information that's right on the money, but it rocks people's boats because it's thinking differently, 17 years before the doc down the street knows that, well, of course, yeah, cholesterol may have a role to play in heart disease. Well, of course, gluten may have a role to play in brain dysfunction. 17 years. For the average celiac patient, the average for celiac patients, when they first start getting symptoms, which, as you know, symptoms are not the first problem. I mean, you got a problem for a long time before you kill off enough tissue that now you start getting tissue dysfunction. And when you get tissue dysfunction, now you start getting symptoms. But when you feel the symptoms, you think you just got this just now. No, it's been going on for a couple of years already at least. But the average for a patient, when they first started getting symptoms and the symptoms were bad enough to go to a doctor, the average is 5 doctors and 11 years before they get the right diagnosis and find out that wheat's the problem.
Wow.
5 doctors, 11 years. That's the average in this country today.
Wow. Is that where the birth of functional medicine has been coming from, and the migration of people from mainstream medical over toward naturopathic doctors?
That's exactly right. It's the birth of functional medicine. The term was coined by Dr. Jeffrey Bland and his wife, Susan Bland, in 1988, I think it was, and they founded the Institute for Functional Medicine. And the entire purpose of the Institute for Functional Medicine is to help our healthcare practitioners take a step back and have a bigger view of their clients, a bigger picture of their patients and where their symptoms are coming from. That people don't get a heart attack because they've got a bad heart. Rarely, you know, rarely. So why do you only go to a heart doctor if you have a heart attack and you survive? Of course you go to a cardiologist, but why do you only go to a cardiologist? You should also go to a functional medicine practitioner, which may be a medical doctor or an osteopath or a chiropractor or an acupuncturist, but who's had the advanced training to say, let's take a look at why your body had a heart attack. Okay, let's take a look. Yes, your cholesterol is high, but let's take a look at your diet. Oh, you know those sliders that you eat every Friday night? They got to go. You know,
whatever the topic is.
But, right, what about beer? Right. Unfortunately, unless it's gluten-free, it's a problem.
I worry about it.
Yeah, I agree. I fully agree. I don't do it. But we need a bigger picture view. You don't want to go just to a dermatologist when you have a skin problem, because a dermatologist is the best person in the world to take a look at your skin and identify what's wrong with your skin and then give you some kind of treatment to fix your skin. But not many people, if they think about it, would think that the skin problem is a problem with the skin. It's got to be coming from somewhere, you know, and it's coming from inside your body or some exposures, you know, some environmental exposures, of course, are possible. But you want a team, or you want a doctor that thinks like a team. That's a functional medicine practitioner. You just want to think like a team to see where's this coming from. For example, we all have heard now about the microbiome and how important the gut is, and the good bacteria in the gut and everything that's in the gut, how important it is. Dr. Bland, who I mentioned earlier, he just did a video a few months ago talking about that he has his microbiome checked 4 times a year. And he looks at the number of bacteria, the kinds of bacteria, the families of bacteria, the ratios of those families. And so he's got a really good sequential understanding of his own microbiome. And his diet's the same, you know, all the time. He's like squeaky clean. The guy's 70. And, you know, he's found out what works in his life to keep him vibrant and full of energy. But he had an emotional stress, a family trauma that was for an extended length of time. I don't know if it was an illness in the family, but there was some type of family trauma that was for an extended length of time. The next time he did his microbiome, it had completely changed to a undesirable microbiome. Stress hormones change the microbiome. So your gut, it could produce something like colitis or Crohn's disease over the years, and it can be from a bad microbiome. And we know that stress changes your microbiome to a not good microbiome. Stress hormones will do that. And Dr. Bland just talked about the mechanisms of how that occurs recently in one of his videos. So what does that tell us? That tells us you got a problem with your gut, but it may be your relationship with the world around you that's causing the problem in your gut. You know, we just have to have the bigger picture. And in the world of food sensitivities, which this topic today is about, in the world of food sensitivities, gluten is the most common food that people have a sensitivity to. And the numbers are, if you check properly, very few doctors have been shown how to check properly, but when you check properly, the numbers are somewhere around 7 out of every 10 people that see a doctor. So if you're going to see a doctor, you've got a complaint. You've got some problem. So 7 out of 10 people that have a complaint going on have elevated antibodies to peptides of gluten. And somewhere around 3 out of 10 for the general population, because not everybody's going to doctors. So it's 3 to 5 out of 10 who just come in for a checkup. They've got no complaints, and they come in for a checkup. 3 to 5 out of 10 will have elevated antibodies to gluten and don't know it. Let me give you an example. There's a test that we do that looks at 24 different tissue antibodies that are called autoimmune antibodies. And it's a screen. It's a really good screen to see where's the weak link in your chain. There are 6 different antibodies for the brain, 3 for your thyroid, 3 for your heart, your lungs, your liver, your colon, your bones, your muscles, that this blood test looks to see where's the weak link in your chain right now. Where is your system being attacked right now? So there was a guy that came in, 44-year-old guy. His father had died at 44 of a massive coronary. His 2 older brothers died in their 40s of massive coronaries. And when his last brother died, this guy was 28, 29, and he went to a cardiologist who put him on a statin drug to lower his cholesterol preventively. He didn't have high cholesterol, but they just wanted to keep it really low because that's all the cardiologist knew to do. Now he's 44 years old, and he comes into me, and he's the picture of health. Because the guy was scared out of his mind, you know, back in his 20s, because, you know, his whole family, all the men were gone. They all died early. So he's a picture of health. He eats really clean, only healthy foods, good foods, whole wheat and brown rice and vegetables and no pop and, you know, that kind of consciousness. He exercises regularly. His body fat was 16%, a good, healthy, fit man. He looked like the picture of health, and all his doctors had told him he was the picture of health. Don't worry about it. You're fine. Well, he came in and said, I want to do your test. I heard about your test. So we ran the test on him. All 3 antibodies to his heart were sky high. Sky high! But he had no symptoms at all. But what it meant was that the antibodies were attacking and killing off his heart tissue, cell by cell by cell. And he said, oh, my God, why is that? And I said, I don't know. Let's find out. So we did a couple more tests, and we found out he was very, very allergic to gluten. So we put him on a gluten-free, and he also had intestinal permeability, the leaky gut. So we put him on a gluten-free diet, cleaned up his gut, you know, got the right bacteria down there, gave him healing nutrients for his gut, gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free diet. 6 months later, and he felt like $1 million. He felt good before, but he felt much better. 6 months later, he comes back in. We redo the blood test. His heart antibodies are perfectly normal. The heart was the weak link in his chain. It could be your brain, like it was for me. I had three antibodies elevated to my brain, the one that caused MS, the one that caused your brain to shrink so old people don't have any grace when they walk. They have to hold on to hand railings walking up and down the stairs, and the one that causes numbness and tingling and your nerves to decay. I had three antibodies elevated when I was in my late 40s, and I was a triathlete in the peak of my career. And I said, this is a mistake. And the lab said, no, it's not. And I said, do it again. Do it again. And they said, we did. We did. We know it's you. We did it again. And that got me to wake up to realize you don't have to feel sick for your body to be being killed off at the weak link of the chain. And it's only when you cross a certain threshold of damage, now you start getting symptoms, which can be really mild at first, and they can last for years before there's enough damage that you now have a real problem.
Wow. You've clearly done a lot of research and talked to a lot of experts. Looking at your offering here with the Gluten Summit, I'm seeing just speaker after speaker of top experts. A lot of them I recognize. Some of them I don't recognize as much, but looking through, I know Jeffrey Smith was a big one I've listened to, talking about GMOs and how those have been brought into the food system and affect us. Something else I remember reading about was that one of the reasons that gluten causes, or well, wheat, that right before it's harvested is doused with Roundup, which is full of glyphosate plus some other toxins. Is that something you find much, or?
You bet. Oh, you bet. That is a serious problem that started a few years ago where someone had the bright idea, well, let's kill the wheat before we harvest it because it dries out. And if we let it dry out in the field for a couple of weeks, it doesn't plug up our combines. So they started killing all the wheat before they harvest it, and that's glyphosate. And that is in the wheat that you buy. You get a croissant at Starbucks, have some glyphosate with your cappuccino. I mean, that's what you're doing. Yes. And although, you know, Monsanto claims that glyphosate is not a problem for humans, now that was really a sleazeball way of, you know, of a position to take, because it's a terrible problem for the bacteria in your gut. It wipes out a lot of the good bacteria in your gut.
It's also a good way of looking past the fact that they haven't actually published any safety results on humans, have they?
Right,
maybe
exactly.
Maybe that's another topic.
Exactly. Yes, it is. You're right. You're absolutely right. And but it does a number on the good bacteria in your gut. And the more we learn, with the studies coming out in the last 10 years, if there is only one thing you could do to be healthier, only one thing, what would that one thing be? Do whatever it takes to have a healthy microbiome. You know, have dial down on that one. Focus on that one. Have a little bit of prebiotics every day, and have a little bit of fermented vegetables every day, so that you're inoculating yourself with the good bacteria every day. Nothing has a more profound impact on your health in the big picture than doing that.
Yeah, I thought I'd read somewhere that a lot of the cultures that have some of the best longevity around the world are cultures that do that, where they eat fermented foods daily as just part of the regular diet.
Yes, that's
keeping
correct.
That
is correct. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty famous study where they took children in a rural village in Africa, still living the way their ancestors had a long time ago, and kids in Europe. And they looked at the microbiome of these groups of kids. And what they found out was that across the board, all of the European kids had a particular characteristic microbiome, and all the African kids had a different characteristic microbiome. And the African kids had a characteristic microbiome that was very balanced and good, healthy bacteria that produce protective factors for any toxins that might come in and to create a healing environment on the lining of the intestines. Really good, healthy bacteria. And across the board, the European kids had a whole lot more of the bacteria that is calorie-saving. Calorie-saving or calorie-hoarding bacteria. And this is a major, major reason why people cannot lose weight and keep it off right now. So I'll tell you that one because it's a really good pearl for people who are concerned about their weight. And the example is the Pima Indians in the southwest U.S. The Pima Indians have lived there for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. I don't know, maybe 1,000 years. I don't know, but a long, long time. And long before there was the modern industrial age. And what do you eat in the four corners of the Southwest that's all desert? Well, there's no broccoli and there's no peaches and you can't grow crops. You know, there's very little food available in that desert area. So the Pima Indians that survived and reproduce are the ones who were really efficient at using the calories that were available from whatever food they could get. And they reproduce, and their kids start their life off with the microbiome of the mom. And so they've got a healthier survival microbiome. And then the next generation, the healthy ones who could utilize their calories well, they thrive and they reproduce, where the ones that couldn't use the calories as well, there wasn't enough for them, they didn't reproduce, and they died off. So that the Pima Indians have a microbiome that is very, very efficient at using calories and hoarding calories. Because there's not a whole lot of food around in the Southwest Desert, right? Fast forward to the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. Now they're on reservations in the Southeast U.S., and they're eating the food that the government brings in, which is canned food and garbage food. And they're eating potato chips and pork rinds and all the other crap, excuse me, that people eat, fast foods. Fast forward to not that, but these people still have the same type of microbiome of their ancestors. And what's the result? 50%, 50% of Pima Indians have type 2 diabetes and are morbidly obese by the age of 35. 50% of them. And some sociologists say, well, it's their culture, you know, they're drinking too much alcohol, and, you know, they're trying to come up with a reason for it. And now we have researchers that say, hey, look, it's their microbiome. These people are the ones that really need to count calories, because these people use a whole lot of efficiency in the food they eat. They get more bang for the buck in every forkful of what they put in their mouths. So that's the way you deal with people who lose weight, they gain it back. They lose weight, they gain it back. They lose weight, they gain it back. Or they can't lose weight. First, you have to rule out pathology, like is there a thyroid problem? Is there some type of hormone irregularity? And when you rule all that out, say that again?
Yeah. I was just going to say I've got a question along those lines when you get to a good spot.
This is good. So the point was, it's the microbiome. It's the microbiome that controls so much of how we function. And so if there's only one thing you can do to be healthier, it's learn how to develop a healthy microbiome.
Yeah. So along those lines, can a traditional doctor do this microbiome test if we ask?
You bet.
Great. And they'll know which ones to do? Or?
No, they won't. No, because they've not been exposed to it, because they don't talk about that at neurology conferences or for the Institute of Dermatologists. They don't talk about that. These are functional medicine concepts. So you have to look for the specialty labs. The information is on my website, thedr.com. Of course, we encourage all healthcare practitioners to check out the Institute for Functional Medicine, and the website is functionalmedicine.org. Or for doctors that really want some focused education, you know, you can go to my website, thedr.com, and you can learn about our Certified Gluten Practitioner Program, and they get all of this and so much more. We teach them not only what tests to do, but how to interpret the tests and what recommendations to give on the different tests depending on the results, and how to step back and get the big picture for people so that you're not like a dog chasing its tail. Oh, my tail itches. I'm going to bite my tail. My tail itches. You know? And unfortunately, that's what we do in medicine so often.
Yeah. This sounds like this is something that people could take to their normal medical doctor and suggest, hey, can you go to this site, check this out, and see if you can learn a little more about functional medicine? See if that's something.
That's a really good idea. You bet. That's a really good idea. And the website is functionalmedicine.org. And it's all science-based. No one can argue with the science, right? You just can't, because these are world-class speakers that we bring in at our annual symposium, Nobel laureates, just the cutting-edge people that have a big picture in their particular area of interest. It's just, once you have a taste of functional medicine, you always want a functional medicine practitioner as part of your team. Always. You don't replace your doctor necessarily. You know, if you've got a good pediatrician for your kids, that's great. You love your pediatrician, that's great. But you also need a functional medicine practitioner to take a look at, why does Johnny get recurrent ear infections? Not just to give the antibiotics that really help, or to hesitantly give the antibiotics and try other things first, but where is it coming from? Why is it happening? How come your child's got asthma or skin problems? Why does your teenager have acne? Where is it coming from? No, you don't give antibiotics for acne. My gosh, it's a short-term patch on a long-term problem.
Yeah. Oh, I see kids when their faces are all broken out. I'm just like, from my own experience, I've learned that, ooh, I bet they need to cut some milk out of their diet.
Exactly.
There might be other things too, but that just seems to be the big one that comes to mind for me. Like,
yeah, that's a very important one.
Yeah. So on that site, is there a way to look up to locate a local functional medicine doctor, or is there a good way?
There actually is a tab or something that says find someone in your area, and you know, you type in your zip code and you can do that. You also can do that on my site. I've got a map of the world, and you can see where these 500 docs are that are all over the world who have really dialed this down on autoimmunity and on gluten sensitivity. So you do have to do a little bit of searching, but once you find someone, you know, you'll be very grateful that you took the time to do it, because your doctor should make sense. You know, when you ask why, it should make sense to you. If they spouts out some technical gobbledygook, then you know that, well, you know, I don't quite get that. I'm sorry, doc, I'm really, you know, I haven't had that kind of education. Can you explain it to me in layman's terms in a way that I can understand it? Okay, good, thanks. Okay, now why is that happening? Okay, good, and why is that happening? Well, we don't know. We think it's stress. You have too much stress. That's not the answer you want. That is a cop-out answer most of the time. Now, in the example with Dr. Bland, there was a family trauma. Now, obviously, that was the trigger for that particular thing. But the vast majority of times, stress is not the answer. Stress is just another factor coming into play.
So let's talk about your offer here, the Gluten Summit. Looks like 29 experts and opinion leaders gathered to prove the world that it must ask, could health issues be caused by gluten? The answers they gave were astonishing. It sounds like this had to have been an amazing experience for you as well, interviewing all of these experts.
Oh, my gosh. You know, when I went to Oxford, England, and interviewed Professor Michael Marsh, You know, when your gastroenterologist does a test to see if you have celiac disease, he puts a tube down your throat, and they take a look at your intestines. It's called an endoscopy. And they snip out a little piece of the intestines. They look under a microscope. And when they do, the report is classified MARSH 1, MARSH 2, MARSH 3. This is MARSH. This is the godfather of all of it. And he's in his 70s, you know, and when I spoke with him, it was such a lovely experience to talk to him. And the things that he tells us about gluten sensitivity without celiac disease are astonishing. And when you hear it from someone like that, you know that you're sitting at the foot of the master. And it just gets you thinking, well, I should look into this a little bit more. My mother had that, and this is genetic. Okay, yeah, I'm going to look into this. You know, you just hear from expert after expert. Dr. Lauren Cordain, who is the founder of this whole paleo movement. 25 years ago, Dr. Cordain started talking about this, that we should be eating more like our ancestors, and he just showed the science as to why. No fanaticism, just good science as to why for some people this really makes a world of difference. Professor Umberto Volta, the godfather of non-celiac gluten sensitivity from Bologna, Italy, talking about how gluten can affect your brain. Professor Yehuda Schoenfeld at Tel Aviv University in Israel, the godfather of predictive autoimmunity, identifying where the weak link is in your chain. And you listen to him talk and you say, wow, I really need to find out what this is. This makes a whole lot of sense that things are going on that eventually build up to the point of where I get a diagnosis. That makes sense. So that's the Gluten Summit. It introduces this whole concept about gluten and about how it can contribute, how frequent gluten is a problem, and how it can contribute to the development of the diseases that we get. I'll tell you one more of this on there, if I just thought of it. Dr. Mark Houston at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. Dr. Houston is the top guy in the world. He's a vascular biologist. That means the health of your blood vessels. And he's the top guy that talks about how a functional medicine approach will change the health of your blood vessels. Thus, you reduce your blood pressure and you reduce your cholesterol and you reduce your risk of heart disease. And Dr. Houston talks on the Gluten Summit about how a sensitivity to wheat will cause high blood pressure and what's the mechanism for that. And then what do you do about it? So it's an incredible learning experience. We had 118,000 people that attended this event online. And we got, and I'm not exaggerating, we got 18,000 emails of thanks for this. And it just, you know, our staff, it brought our staff to tears many times, you know, to read some of these testimonials a month, 2 months after people listen to it and they apply these principles and how their lives change. So you want inspired change in your life, listening to experts. Listening to experts like that is a really good tool to help.
No kidding. And this sounds like it's not just for health practitioners, but this is for everybody that's interested to learn more about gluten and how it affects their health, right?
Oh, that's correct. That's right. It was designed for the everyday person, and thousands of practitioners said, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. You know, so those that listened were really happy they did also.
Wow. Yeah, so let me speak to the listeners, and if you go to the earthiswakingup.com/now page, you'll see Dr. Thomas O'Brien at the top, and if you click on the link there, you can follow that to the page with his special, and look through there, see all the experts, get a better idea of what's in that package. There's two packages, more of an intro package and one that's got the all-access reference library, physical copies. What else? I'm still looking at this list of speakers in that summit. And I think $97 for a copy of that summit is amazing. Especially
you know,
if you're looking
it really,
to take back your health.
It really does, and I'm not exaggerating. It changes people's lives It really does. Like I'm so proud of the effect that it's had. I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to have done this, and you know, to see the changes. And I get stopped in airports all the time now because I travel a lot. You know, people just walk up to me and say, "Are you Dr. Tom?" And I'll say, "Yes." And I mean, this has happened so often that a woman would just start crying. She gets tears in her eyes and she starts crying. It happened a couple of weeks ago when I went through the security at TSA and I'm getting my bag and, you know, my shoes off of the thing. And this woman walked up to me, you know, and she started crying. And I put my hand on her shoulder, and this guy comes walking to me really aggressively, and she said, no, honey, this is Dr. O'Brien. And he just looked at me, and he said, "Can I shake your hand?" And he said, you saved our daughter's life. Your summit, our daughter had juvenile arthritis. It's called idiopathic, which means we don't know why you got it. Juvenile arthritis. It started when she was 3 years old. The only thing that worked was steroids, and they had her on steroids for 11 years, 11 years. And these are very powerful medications that shortened her growth. I mean, she was the shortest kid in the class. She was 14, and her girlfriends had already gotten their cycles, and she still looked like a little girl. You know, she wasn't developing. And they heard the Gluten Summit, and they decided as a family, let's give this a try. Let's do it for 1 month. And in less than 2 weeks, I think it was, if I'm remembering correctly, all this girl's pain was gone for the first time since she was 3 years old. And off the drugs, growing like a sprout now, you know, just bursting every day. And these were her parents that happened to be right by me in the TSA line. And that happens a lot. You know, that people see dramatic changes in you. You just need to be empowered. You need to be inspired to take the leap and give it a shot. You know, you just need that oomph, you know, and I think most of us need to say, well, that makes sense to me. All right, I'll try that. I'll try it for 3 weeks. Okay. My book is now at Amazon. It's in the pre-order stage. It comes out September the 12th, and so people can order it now, and they get a 60% discount, and I think it's like $16 or something now, and the book is called The Autoimmune Fix, and it's the continuation of this whole world of immune sensitivity from foods and pulling on the weak link of your chain and how it can develop, but the Gluten Summit, you hear it from the horse's mouths. You hear it from the world experts. And because I've read their studies, I know what questions to ask of them to pull the information I wanted from them. And, you know, so they would talk, "Oh, you're asking, okay, sure, I'll talk about that." And then they would go into that particular topic. And it was just remarkable. It was a wonderful experience for me. And the aftermath has been so beneficial for so many thousands of people.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So what is one thing, it sounds like you may have already just said it, but just, I guess, a double check. If there was one thing you'd like our listeners to walk away from today, what would that be?
Every forkful of what you put in your mouth is either inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. There's no neutrals. Except healthy water. That's the only neutral. Every forkful. So if you've got a fire going on, if you've got inflammation in your body, it may be manifesting as a thyroid problem or as a brain problem, and you can't remember the way you used to, or a joint problem or a skin problem, wherever the weak link is. If you've got inflammation in your body, do you think it's okay to throw a little gasoline on there once in a while? It's not. It's not. You need to clean it up completely, get to the level of health that you want, and from that place, then you say, okay, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? How do I want to maintain my health? Man, I feel like $1 million. How do I want to keep this? Well, maybe I can have a little once in a while, and you'll notice that you can't. But the takeaway message is that every forkful of what you put in your mouth is either inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. Make healthy choices.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much, Dr. Tom, for all the work that you're doing, for this offer that you have with the summit, with all these amazing experts. Looking through the list, you know, there's too many names to mention, but, you know, Dr. Mark Houston, Dr. David Perlmutter, Dr. Rodney Ford, Dr. Liz Lipsky, Dr. Mark Hyman, there's so many.
Yes.
J.J. Virgin, yes. Sayer G., Dr. Daniel Amen, Peter Osborne, Jeffrey Smith. On it goes. Dave Asprey, biohacking. So many big names. So thanks to you and to all the listeners. I wish everyone all the best in your journey to better health and discovering what's really going on and how healthy you are. Sounds like some pearls here would be to educate yourself more, whether that's buying this package or on your own, however that is for you. Finding a functional medicine doctor, getting some tests done, learn how to take back your health. If Dr. Tom's offer here is helpful in that, awesome. I hope that it all works out well. Thanks so much, and much love to everyone.